Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Welcome to Trumpet Radio Live. This is Monday. It is September the 5th. It's Labor Day, and I'm laboring. We're laboring here at KPCG. We will have a program for you today and great programming throughout the day. Coming up on this edition of Trumpet Radio Live, some history about Labor Day. Give you some insight into what this day is all about, where it started. Also, a German election didn't go well for Angela Merkel's party. We'll talk about that. Trumpet Daily Radio Show and Key of David preview. And some of the benefits of more sleep and maybe a little less work. We'll talk about that coming up on this edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG. We're online, kpcg.fm. Live link there at thetrumpet.com. And we have our archives there as well. If you missed any of the programming here on KPCG, you can find the archives online at kpcg.fm. Also, you can go to thetrumpet.com and find those there also. This is the Trumpet Radio Live Monday edition, Labor Day edition. Dwight Falk with you here today. Grant Turgeon is taking the day off. He'll be back with us tomorrow. And Labor Day is a really interesting holiday. It, of course, is the first Monday in September, which is today. It's a creation of the labor movement and is dedicated to the social and economic achievements of American workers. Constitutes a yearly national tribute to the contributions workers have made to the strength, prosperity, and well-being of our country. And that's the basic premise behind the holiday. It's an annual celebration, of course, as mentioned. And it originated during one of American labor's history's most dismal chapters. In the late 1800s, at the height of the Industrial Revolution in the United States, the average American worked 12-hour days and 7-day weeks in order to eke out a basic living. So back there in the late 1800s, work was very hard and the pay wasn't great. A lot of people worked in mills, factories, and mines across the country, sometimes children as young as 5 or 6. So, of course, there's laws against that today, but back in the day, 5 and 6 year olds and, of course, older, and did some pretty serious labor. And they earned a fraction of their adult counterparts' wages. People of all ages, particularly the very poor and recent immigrants, often faced extremely unsafe working conditions with insufficient access to fresh air, sanitary facilities, and breaks. So it was a lot more difficult in a lot of areas there in the Industrial Revolution. And that's when Labor Day came to the to be and took that first Monday in September to honor the contributions of the workers. So today it's not that bad in most places. Working is a much easier situation. But it is good to remember that history. And sometimes, I suppose, people can feel overwhelmed maybe by their job or they don't they think it's too hard. But it's good to look back at the history and see what some people had to go through, which was a lot more serious back in the day. So 5 and 6 year olds that are listening, you don't want to take out the trash or whatever your responsibility at home is. At least you're not working in the mill or the factory or a mine. So most people don't have to suffer that today, thankfully. But that's some of the history of Labor Day. It's an interesting day. And today, of course, it's usually a 3-day weekend and people enjoy various activities and picnics and so forth. And we thank you for spending some of your Monday with us here on KPCG on this Labor Day. Pretty interesting weekend in the headlines. We have a few to look at here. Angela Merkel's CDU suffers Mecklenburg-Western Pomerania poll loss. The alternative Fuhrer Deutschland, AfD party, took just under 21% of the vote behind the center-left SPD's 30%. The German Chancellor's CDU was backed by only 19% of voters, its worst ever result in the state. So she has not been popular lately. And The numbers bear that out. The vote was seen as a key test before German parliamentary elections in 2017. Before the vote in Mecklenburg-West Pomerania, in the former East Germany, all of Germany's other parties ruled out forming a governing coalition with the AfD. But the party, formed only 3 years ago, is already represented in 9 of Germany's 16 state parliaments. So it's kind of an alternative party. Some people aren't very happy with it, I guess, but they are gaining in popularity. Sort of a reaction to, the immigration and the feeling there in Germany that there needs to be some changes. Jenny Hill, who is a BBC Berlin correspondent, said this: "This is humiliating for Angela Merkel, not least because this was on home turf. Mrs. Merkel's constituency is in Mecklenburg-West Pomerania. This election, which was seen as a significant test ahead of next year's general election, was all about her refugee policy. For a year, she's insisted, 'Wir schaffen es,' or 'We can do it.' But German voters aren't convinced." And so she's really holding to her thoughts on this, that they should allow more refugees into the country, that they need to have more of an open policy there where they allow them to continue to come in. And then on the other hand, there's been, of course, terrorism over this last year in Europe and in Germany in particular. You might remember they had that, several-week span where there was like one attack after the next, and people are getting quite upset about it. There's been Germans that have come out and said, you know, this is not our culture. You know, if people want to live in this country, they need to follow our culture, or the German culture. And so there's a real dispute there between the two cultures, between the Catholic Germans, Christian Germans, I suppose there's Protestants there as well, and the Islamic immigrants. And it really is a breakdown and a division between different religious ideologies and different ways of life that stem from those. So interesting to see what's happening there. Of course, there's a lot written at thetrumpet.com about what you can expect to see happen with Germany and Europe. Things are moving very quickly there with, of course, the UK no longer in the EU or voting to leave, and lots of changes in that region. And so you can expect to see things move pretty quickly there in Germany and in Europe as they really focus on becoming a group of nations there with Germany at the head. And that's been talked about for years from Herbert W. Armstrong, and now continues here at thetrumpet.com. Gerald Fleury's written a lot about that. We have some Key of David programs about that as well. Lots of information at thetrumpet.com that you can check out about Germany, about Europe, and what you can expect to see happen over there. So it'll be interesting to see. Angela Merkel not very popular right now. And this these numbers from this vote, which is seen as a key test before German parliamentary elections in 2017, have German Chancellor's CDU get only 19% of the vote. So that's the worst ever result in the state, pretty significant there in Germany. Couple other things to talk about today. Of course, we'll get into a few other headlines with the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, but here's a couple that are a little more of the human interest variety, but pretty interesting. This is a pretty neat story. You hear about these things occasionally where somebody works a pretty regular job and live pretty humbly. They die, and it turns out they've been saving millions of dollars. Well, that happened. This story says, librarian quietly saved $4 million and left it to school where he worked. So this is a pretty neat story. You never know. You look at a librarian, they could be saving millions of dollars. It says a librarian who quietly saved a $4 million fortune passed away and left his entire estate to the university where he worked for nearly 50 years. So in this day and age, you don't usually have people work at one particular job, let alone at one particular place for that long. But this gentleman worked there for 50 years, nearly 50 years. His name is Robert Morin. He graduated from the University of New Hampshire in 1963, and he worked as a cataloger in Diamond Library. And he was known to live simply, and he loved books, as you would expect, according to the school's website. In fact, he was such a lover of the bounded written word that he read every book published in the U.S. between 1930 and 1940. And he read those in chronological order, I guess with some exceptions. They didn't specify what the exceptions were. The school estimates that by the time he died last year, at the age of 77, he had read 1,938 books. So that's a lot of books. He was reading and saving his money. And he saved up a lot, $4 million. And so he left his entire estate to the school. So pretty neat there. They'll definitely benefit from that. And it's just always it's fascinating that he read so much. But also it's just fascinating that he saved up that much money. And it just goes to show that you don't have to be making millions of dollars a year to save up a fair bit. He worked hard at his job and saved, and he ended up with $4 million at the end. And then gave it back to the school, which is great. You know, he didn't go out and buy a yacht or whatever, I guess, a person could do. He liked reading and was focused on that. So pretty interesting gentleman and a, kind of a good story there. Speaking of success in business, this is an interesting little write-up here. I think you're familiar probably with Mark Zuckerberg. He is the founder of Facebook, and I don't know, he's a billionaire, I guess. A lot of money there, of course, is Facebook is used by a lot of people. But he was asked recently on a trip to Rome, he was asked to name the three traits of people who make it to the top. And I guess you could say in the technology front, he's probably made it to the top, or he's one of the people that has. So here's his three traits that he sees as valuable for people to make it and be successful in whatever field they're in. He said, if you want to build something great, you should focus on what the change is that you want to make in the world, Zuckerberg said. I see too many entrepreneurs who decide that they want to start a company before they actually know what it is that they want to build. To me, that seems backwards. And I think that makes a lot of sense. You'd have to have an idea of what you wanted to accomplish before you can actually accomplish it. He said, secondly, they surround themselves. He's talking about these successful people. They surround themselves with other highly successful and motivated people. No one does it alone, Zuckerberg said. When you look at most big things that get done in the world, they're not done by one person, so you're going to need to build a team. And, of course, we see that very specifically in sports all the time. You can have one really good player, but if he's not on a good team, he's not going to win because they need a team. And the same is true in business, and I guess you could say in life, too. A good team, a team of highly motivated and successful people. He said, to build the strongest team possible, look for people who excel in the areas where you're weaker or less experienced. You're going to need people that have complementary skills, he emphasized. No matter how talented you are, there are just going to be things that you don't bring to the table. And that's true. I mean, nobody wants to think that. I think most of us want to feel like we're good at everything and we can do everything. But the truth is that nobody can do everything. There are certain strengths that some people have, and then other people have different strengths. So if you can get those people together who have complementary skills and can work together, then you can have a pretty good team. You know, again, if you look at, say, a sports analogy, you can have a really good quarterback on a football team, but if you don't have guys in front of him that are good at blocking, you know, he's not going to be successful. He can't block and throw the football. He needs people with different skills. And linemen in football usually aren't very good at throwing 50-yard touchdown passes, but they're good at blocking the people in front of them. And so people need complementary skills, and a group that has complementary skills can build a pretty good team. Finally, Mark Zuckerberg said, the entrepreneurs who make it big are persistent. Nothing ever goes the way you want it to, he said. People talk about overnight success, and that's not the way it works. The ones who come out on top are the ones who refuse to give up, despite the inevitable trials and tribulations they face throughout the process. And if you're familiar with Herbert W. Armstrong's book on the 7 Laws of Success, you know that ties in very much with what he taught about not giving up and making sure that you have that stick-to-itiveness, as some people call it, that persistence to keep going, to keep working. Zuckerberg concluded the biggest things that have gotten done in the world tend to be done by people who primarily believe in a mission and are not trying to build a company, by teams, not by individuals, and by people who just don't give up. And so they believe in a mission. They're not just trying to build some company and make money. It's something they want to do specifically. It's built by teams, not just by individuals. Of course, it does take a good leadership, as is evidenced by certain individuals, like, say, Mark Zuckerberg or Steve Jobs. But then they do need a good team, and by people who just don't give up. So that is something to consider. Pretty interesting points. I mean, he's been a successful guy, so I think we can put some value in what he's saying there. And there's a lot at thetrumpet.com you can find out about success. That's something everyone's interested in. You go into a bookstore, the self-help or the success aisle is one of the bigger ones, I guess. There's a lot of books about it anyway, because people are interested in that topic, and rightfully so. But Herbert W. Armstrong's Seven Laws of Success, you can get that for free at thetrumpet.com. That gets into this more specifically, some really good laws and principles to follow. There's a really good Key of David program on about Steve Jobs. There's a few about him and Apple and that company and how he was so successful in it. And, of course, that's tied into then taking that and looking at having spiritual success as well, more than just the physical success. So there's a lot of good write-ups at thetrumpet.com about that, and some Key of David programs too. But this is an interesting little write-up here from about Mark Zuckerberg and some of the traits, the three traits that he said of people who make it to the top. So now that you know the secrets, is there room at the top for everybody? Can we all be there? I don't know. Somebody's got to be at the top. But pretty interesting there, and of course he has been successful. So interesting to see what he had to say. Here's another story. This is kind of interesting. I don't know if you've heard of this Burning Man Festival. It is a sort of a music festival, I guess, would be the main thing that it is. And it happens out west in the U.S. And it's kind of a, I guess, a bit of a wild time. And but now it's taken on more of a, supposed to be about peace and love, right? Like they all are, these festivals. But this one's gotten a little bit violent, I guess. It says, revolution against, quote, rich parasites at utopian Burning Man Festival as hooligans attack luxury camp. So what happens is they have this music festival. It's been going on, I guess, since mid-80s. And people show up and they have their party out there in Nevada in the Black Rock Desert. And they build this city for a week. I guess, or so, however long the festival is. But now what's happened is people with quite a bit of money have come out there, and they like to have their little party as well, except they build up a little luxury camp, and they have a luxury party. And so some people are upset about that, and that kind of, I guess, ties into some of the thinking about people being anti-1%, as they call it, and it's spilled over into this Burning Man Festival. It's always funny how these festivals are supposed to be about peace and love and cooperation, and they always end up in anything but that. It says it's supposed to be a utopian vision of peace and love, but this year's Burning Man Festival has been marred by hooligans carrying out a revolution against rich parasites. This is from The Telegraph, by the way. The festival plays out each year in Nevada's Black Rock Desert. They get about 70,000 people out there. They burn a giant wooden effigy of a man and then restore the arid area to its original state. So the question why would come to mind, but that's what they want to do out there in the desert. Hence Burning Man, because they burn this giant effigy of a man. In recent years, it has become popular with Silicon Valley millionaires and billionaires. Luxurious so-called plug-and-play camps have sprung up, which use hired staff like cooks, builders, and security, and allow international jet-setters to drop in for quick visits to this Burning Man Festival. So the people that are more of the common man, they're getting upset about this. It says many traditional burners, as they're called, claim that this is a betrayal of the spirit of radical self-reliance that is a cornerstone of the festival, which began in 1986. So, again, it's one of those things where They say it's about radical self-reliance, but it seems like it's loud music and people kind of just going crazy. But I guess that's their definition of radical self-reliance. So they're not upset. The traditional burners are not upset that the rich folks are coming in and taking over their party. As anger boiled over, one camp called White Ocean, which hosts high-profile DJs on a state-of-the-art stage, became the focus of anger. The camp first made an appearance at Burning Man 3 years ago, and its founders included the British DJ Paul Oakenfold and the son of a Russian billionaire. So they threw some money into this and got their little party going out there. People got upset about it. It says, while the camp was holding its, quote, white party, at which revelers dress in all white and listen to techno music, it was attacked by vandals who flooded it with water and cut power lines. So they're trying to restore some order and some calm out there in the in the desert of Nevada, the Burning Man Festival. They can't get along out there. It is a microcosm of humans, I guess. They put together a human society. They put together this festival supposed to be about, well, radical self-reliance and I guess peace and love and such. But it ended up being pretty violent there to some extent. So they sabotaged the white party. So probably should stay away from the Burning Man Festival. That would be my guess, especially if you're rich. You don't want to go out there and get attacked. But so they do that out there in the desert. It's interesting to say the least. There's been some pictures online that some of the celebrities and the richer people go out there, well, along with others, and dress up in bizarre costumes and burn this giant wooden effigy and dance to techno music. And somehow that didn't bring the peace and love they were hoping for. So kind of a bizarre situation out there. I've heard of that before. And it also does highlight just some of the, I think some of the social protests that are trying to gain traction. You've seen the people protesting against the 1%, as they're called. And I think this probably fits in somewhat into that thinking. So that's some of what's going on in the world here on this Labor Day holiday. And, of course, we do have news updates at the top of the hour here on KPCG as well to get you all the top headlines of the day so you can always keep up to date with what's going on in the world. There is a Key of David program today playing here on KPCG. We play several programs throughout the day. You can check your local list or your listings, kpcg.fm, and see what time it pops up in your local area. Of course, we do broadcast at 101.3 here in the Edmond, Oklahoma City area, and we're live online at kpcg.fm. So different time zones all around the world. People are listening. We appreciate you listening at various areas of the world. You can check kpcg.fm for the times in which your favorite programming does play, and we'll have some Key of David programs for you today. And, of course, those are videos. Normally, we play the audio here on the radio station, but if you want to see the videos, you can check those out online at thetrumpet.com, and there you'll find the Key of David videos, the Trumpet Daily videos, any other video presentations that we have. So it's kind of a one-stop for everything there at thetrumpet.com, and you can check out the Key of David's, the latest ones, or go back into the archives and see some of the older ones. And those are really great to watch or to listen to because you can see how much has happened since they were originally recorded. A lot of times they're talking about, of course, prophetic topics. And so it's always interesting to go back and see what was being said 5-10 years ago on a particular topic and now see where we are today. It's a really great way to look at how things have developed. And so check that out at thetrumpet.com. Look for the Key of David program and listen for it here on KPCG as well. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show today with your host, Stephen Fleury from Edstone, England. He did a program today, working today also on Labor Day, getting some programs out there. And he talked about what probably is the big story of the weekend, which is the in the lead up to the G20 summit there in China, the 20 biggest economic nations arriving at the summit. There was a great disrespect that was shown to the U.S., their party that came, and the president that was with them. President Obama, of course, if you've paid attention to the headlines at all, you've seen a lot about this over the weekend or read about it. President came there. They wouldn't roll out the stairs for him. They wouldn't allow the press and others to get over to where the president was, and the Chinese official was yelling that it was their country, and just really quite a spectacle. Unusual, too, for China to treat the U.S. that way. Clearly, we're not allies, but at the same time, there has been respect for the U.S. over the years because of our power status in the world, superpower status. And yet here, that was different. We were treated, well, like a third world country, really. And the U.S. president came out and said that, well, he tried to downplay it, and he said, these things happen. Things like this happen. They are welcomed, if you want to call it that. They are welcomed like this in other nations as well. Which, to me, that was a surprising comment because I thought, well, that doesn't make it better. That makes it worse. You mean to tell me that we're treated that way everywhere? I don't think Teddy Roosevelt would have stood for that, or a few other men that I can think of over the years that led the United States. But that's the times in which we live. So really interesting program today. Make sure you listen for that. And, of course, a lot of it has to do also, this meeting there ahead of the G20 has to do with this climate initiative that the U.S. is behind. Well, I shouldn't say the U.S. The president's behind it because it didn't pass a vote or anything. He just willed it to be. And so basically, there's a lot more details given at the Trump Daily Radio Show today, but the U.S. has to, you know, do a lot of things that are going to harm our economy in the name of global preservation. And China, they said they might at some point do some things along those same lines, but really they're not doing anything yet, nothing substantive anyway. So really just interesting program. Make sure you listen for that. That's coming up here on the Trump Daily Radio Show. It highlights the demise of the U.S. and the rise of these Gentile powers. I mean, the audacity for China to treat the U.S. that way. But then again, there will be no response to it. We won't do anything. So they know that we're not going to do anything about it here in the U.S. So they're emboldened to do more and more. And, of course, it sets a precedent. It sets an example. I don't think they would treat Vladimir Putin that way. But it's interesting, too, just following along with this thinking about, or this topic about how the U.S. is being disrespected, and that's really the main issue here. Here's another little story that ties into that. You've probably heard of the Philippine president. He's a pretty outlandish individual, Rodrigo Duterte. And, of course, he's been in the news a lot lately because of how just angry he gets, how undiplomatic he is, and that he's basically allowing people to kill drug users and drug dealers in his country. And so it's been quite a situation that's popped up in the news. But it says Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte warned President Barack Obama on Monday not to question him about extrajudicial killings, or, and then he used a very derogative term, which I will not say, called the president that, and said, "I will swear at you," when they meet in Laos during a regional summit. Duterte said before flying to Laos that he is a leader of a sovereign country and is answerable only to the Filipino people. He was answering a reporter's question about how he intends to explain the extrajudicial killings to Obama. More than 2,000 suspected drug pushers and users have been killed since Duterte launched a war on drugs after taking office on June the 30th. So this reporter asked Duterte, so, well, how will you explain these killings, these more than 2,000 killings, to the U.S. president? And Duterte said, "That's so-and-so, I'll swear at him if he asks me about it." I mean, this is the Philippines. Not in any way a power in this world on the global scale. And there, he's talking that way to the president of the United States publicly. I mean, that's pretty bold. And yet it just highlights that he doesn't. Now, he's a pretty outlandish leader, no doubt, but it just highlights that there is no fear of the U.S. There's no fear at all. Now, maybe some would see that as a good thing, but it's not a good thing, because if there's no fear, there is no reason to listen to what the U.S. has to say. You know, the idea that we're just going to all be chums around the world and work together hand in hand, it's not going to happen. You know, you can look at that story about the Burning Man Festival. Humans don't get along with each other. It just doesn't happen. They break into cliques. They break into groups. You know, one side wants what they want. The other side wants what they want. And so it usually comes down to what? Power, fighting, war. And the U.S. is just getting weaker and weaker and weaker to be treated this way by China. And then to have the Philippine president come out and just swear at the president, President Obama. You know, where is the respect for a superpower in the world? Unless, of course, I don't think we're a superpower anymore. Different times. Interesting times. So as is highlighted in the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, and it's been talked about in some recent write-ups, or rather written about in some recent write-ups at thetrumpet.com, the U.S. is losing its power abroad, but the power of the president is being expanded within the U.S. And don't we see that everywhere? Pretty interesting times. Make sure you listen for this Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host, Stephen Fleury. He gets into a lot more details, and you even get to hear the audio clip of the Chinese official yelling that it's their country. And it's pretty shocking, and really, I mean, it should make I think Americans' blood boil a little bit to be treated that way. And yet, well, it's just downplayed. No big deal. We're treated that way everywhere. Unbelievable. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host, Stephen Fleury. Make sure you listen for that if you can't catch it live or one of the replays. Make sure you get this one at the archives at kpcg.fm. Don't miss an opportunity to hear this important show. We'll take a quick break, and when we come back, take a look at something about work. How much are we working? Working a lot of hours? Is it helping? Does it help to work more and more hours? Or does it more beneficial to get a little extra shut-eye? We'll take a look at some reports on that right after this on this Labor Day edition. Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG, online, kpcg.fm.
We'll be right back to Trumpet Radio Live.
Greetings, I'm Ryan Malone, host of Music for Life. And did you know how much influence William Shakespeare had on music history? We are going to explore that in our next episode, the vast array of operas, ballets, orchestral, and vocal works that were inspired by his plays and writings. In our Sounds of Scripture segment, we're going to see how Shakespeare himself was heavily influenced by the Bible, particularly its poetry. And in our Classroom Corner segment, we will explore what music education was like back in the Middle Ages and the Renaissance. So join me to experience what the Bard himself called the touches of sweet harmony on our next episode of Music for Life, The Shakespearean Influence.
This Monday at 4 p.m. Central on 101.3 KPCG and online at kpcg.fm.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG. KPCG is supported by the Philadelphia Church of God. The Philadelphia Church of God also publishes the Philadelphia Trumpet. The Trumpet is a free monthly news magazine that analyzes world events. It offers a distinct editorial perspective that matches current news to Bible prophecy. The Trumpet identifies the United States, Britain, Canada, Australia, Israel, Germany, and other nations in ancient history and in current prophecy. The Trumpet also forecasts the future of the English-speaking world as well as Europe, radical Islam, and Asia. The news magazine appears monthly and is free of charge or obligation. The Trumpet is published in North Edmond, Oklahoma, alongside KPCG Radio. More information is available online at thetrumpet.com.
Welcome back to Trumpet Radio Live here, 101.3 KPCG. Thanks for joining us. KPCG.fm, live link there at thetrumpet.com. You can listen at the TuneIn app also. Put that on your smart device. Take it with you. Dwight Falk with you here today. Grant Turgeon has a day off. He'll be back tomorrow. So don't fret. He will be with us on Tuesday. Interesting write-up here from the Washington Post. It says, stop touting the crazy hours you work. It helps no one. There are, I guess, some people that claim to work a lot of hours and maybe do. But they're saying it's not helpful. A Gallup poll found that 50% of people work more than 40 hours a week, and the average, nearly 47 hours a week in 2014, has been creeping up for years. Now, of course, as was highlighted at the beginning of today's program, they used to work a lot more back in the, say, late 1800s, but that was pretty extreme. So there has been sort of a dip in the work hours, but now it's starting to creep up a little bit. The expectation of crazy hours is strong enough that one researcher found some men, they say, pretend to work an 80-hour week even when they don't. So that would be quite a bit, 80 hours. I guess that could be broken down a few different ways, but they say they pretend to do it. They don't. I'm sure there are probably some that actually do work that long, but anyway, some people are working quite a bit. They say, yet research time and time again shows the problems with overwork on people's health, on turnover, in other words, not, you know, staying at one place and being able to be consistent, on absenteeism, and on productivity. Studies have shown that after about 50 hours a week, productivity actually decreases, and it plummets after 55 hours, leaving no detectable difference between those who work 56 hours and those who work 70 or 130, as Mayer, the writer or the person involved here, suggested may be needed for successful startups. So there's a suggestion that if you want to start up a business, you need to work 130 hours a week. You can do the math on that. That's a lot of time per day. They say that's an absurd number of hours, translating into more than 18 hours a day of work, 7 days a week. Whew. That would be difficult to hold up. It's illogical given the research, they say. It's obviously unsustainable. And if that's how we're going to measure success in the workplace today, we're in big trouble. Some people are measuring their success, I guess, based upon how much time they put in. There is a correlation there to, in some ways. I mean, obviously a person has to put in a decent amount of time to do something, but it's getting to be a bit much potentially. Some companies, of course, are looking for smart solutions. They say Aetna is paying workers up to $500 a year if they get 20 nights of at least 7 hours of sleep in a row, using Fitbit devices to help them keep track. So if you can prove that you've been getting 7 hours of sleep at least 20 nights in a row, you get $500. That sounds pretty good. Boston Consulting Group has teams set aside predictable time off, covering for each other so they can be available to both their clients and their families. And Amazon.com, which came under fire last year after a New York Times piece about its demanding work culture, will soon launch an experiment that sets up technical teams made up solely of part-time workers earning benefits and salaries but at lesser pay. One key reason it could work, managers of these teams will work just 30 hours a week too. That could help prevent the hours creep that typically happens when part-time workers supervised by people who work much longer hours try to limit their hours in a 24/7 work world. And that's Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos owns the Washington Post, by the way. So they have a little piece here about what they're going to do, and the guy owns the paper. So maybe there's a little more to that write-up. But it is interesting. It seems like it goes from one side of the extreme to the other, you know, where people want to work over 100 hours a week, and they say, no, we only need to work 30 hours a week, and there's got to be some middle ground there. They say, yes, success comes from hard work, and yes, CEOs paid millions of dollars or early startup employees who stand to reap huge rewards may choose to work 100-hour weeks. Entrepreneurs who can kick off at 3 p.m. if they start at 4 a.m. and aren't expected to show their face until rush hour starts may love their early morning routines, but they should be mindful that while oddball hours or absurdly long slogs at the desk may work for them, they also set an unattainable standard for many others. And so what they're getting at here is that some people are working very, very large amounts of hours and kind of setting a standard that other people are trying to do as well. They're trying to work those types of hours, thinking that that's the model for success, but it's not helping a lot of people. But again, then there's the other side where they're only working, you know, 20, 30 hours a week or part-time and so forth. So it's interesting. It's probably always a debate. What's the exact right amount of time to work? It is interesting. Of course, if you look to the Bible, it talks about working 6 days a week. And not necessarily that you have to be at one particular job for 6 days, but it does talk about 6 days of week and then one Sabbath day of rest. But people don't typically look to the Bible for those types of guidelines, although they are there. But it is interesting if you highlight how much some people are working, and then you look at the other side of the coin with sleep. Like we mentioned in that article there, you know, there's one company that they say if you can sleep 7 hours a night at least for 20 nights in a row, you get $500. Sign me up, right? That doesn't seem like it would be too hard. They're going to track you on Fitbit, though. And if your Fitbit doesn't agree that you've been sleeping, that might be a problem. Which is always funny to me. How does Fitbit know? I mean, they must obviously like check your pulse and your movement and your rate of breathing or something. But it is always kind of funny to for Fitbit to tell you how much you've slept. But this interesting write-up that ties in with that, 9 surprising reasons to get more sleep. And they say that a little more sleep is good. Now, again, same thing here. You could go too far with it and sleep all day. That wouldn't be any good. But it seems like people want to go to the extremes. Work all the time, very little sleep, or sleep all the time, very little work. There doesn't seem to be a lot in the middle, but the middle is where we probably should be. It says, what difference could an extra hour of sleep make in your life? Maybe quite a lot, experts say. Studies show that the gap between getting just enough sleep and getting too little sleep may affect your health, your mood, your weight, and other things. And that's talked about a lot. You know, if you read weight loss articles, they talk about how you need to sleep more to lose weight. And it's interesting because it's easy to think, well, I should get up earlier and do exercise, which is not a bad idea, of course. But if you don't get enough sleep, it's hard to lose weight. So the body is a finely tuned machine, or it should be, and it can get out of whack a little bit. They say if you're getting less than the recommended 7 or 8 hours of sleep a night, here are 9 reasons that you should shut down your computer, turn off the lights, and go to bed an hour early tonight. So this is something we're challenged with every day and every evening. Can we get 7 to 8 hours of sleep? Sometimes people want to and they have a hard time sleeping, but sometimes schedules get busy and it's hard to find those 7 or 8 hours. But they say it's important. Here are a few reasons why. Number one, better health. Getting a good night's sleep won't grant you immunity from disease, but study after study has found a link between insufficient sleep and some serious health problems such as heart disease, heart attacks, diabetes, and obesity. In most cases, the health risks from sleep loss only become serious after years. So if you have one night that's not a lot of sleep, typically it won't be too detrimental. They say, but that might not always be true. One study simulated the effects of the disturbed sleep patterns of shift workers on 10 young healthy adults. After a mere 4 days, 3 of them had blood glucose levels that qualified as pre-diabetic. So they are saying it can affect you pretty quickly, although the body can probably balance back pretty quickly as well, as long as you're not making a habit of it. But even after 4 days, they're saying you start to see some pretty serious changes. One of the other reasons is just better relationships. According to a poll conducted by the National Sleep Foundation, 26% of people think that their relationships tend to suffer because they're just too tired. And they get cranky with each other and so forth. And you know how that is. If you don't get enough sleep, it's easy to be irritable. And so that can have some bearing there. Another area is less pain. They say if you get more sleep, you may have less pain. If you have chronic pain or acute pain from a recent injury, getting enough sleep may actually make you hurt less, which is pretty amazing. Many studies have shown a link between sleep loss and lower pain threshold. Unfortunately, being in pain can make it hard to sleep. Researchers have found that getting good sleep can supplement medication for pain if pain is keeping you up at night. They say, you know, there are medications available that can try to help with that. Of course, that's always, I guess, a personal decision there and can be somewhat dicey depending on what the medications are. But the bottom line, more sleep, better. It helps with the chronic pain issues. Another reason that it's good to get about 7 to 8 hours of sleep, lower risk of injury. Sleeping enough might actually keep you safer. Sleep deprivation has been linked with many notorious disasters, like the destruction of the Space Shuttle Challenger, the grounding of the Exxon Valdez. The Institute of Medicine estimates that 1 out of 5 auto accidents in the U.S. result from drowsy driving. That's about 1 million crashes a year. And I have seen reports where they say if a person is quite tired, it can be more dangerous than driving drunk. And so, you know, we probably don't tend to think of it that way, but it is pretty serious. I know personally, I had a few overnight shifts back in my younger years, in radio in particular. And driving home from an overnight radio shift, those were 2 times where I got speeding tickets. And I wasn't going that fast. I was thinking I was going 45 and a 35. There was no one on the road, and I was tired. But I think that's why it happened, because I was so tired, I just wasn't paying as much attention as I should have. Not intentionally, of course, but when you get just sleep deprived, it's hard to focus. I think we've all been there. So I can attest to the fact, thankfully I've never had any accidents, but I can attest to the fact that it is harder to drive when you're tired, and I think we've all been in that situation before and know that that's true. And so there is a lower risk of injury if you're getting enough sleep. They say if you're overtired, you're more likely to trip or fall off a ladder, cut yourself while chopping vegetables. Household accidents like that can have serious consequences. That's from an author who wrote Sleep Deprived No More, who says that you can even have those household accidents if you're too tired. Another reason it's good to get enough sleep, you have a better mood. This ties into the relationships there. Getting enough sleep won't guarantee a sunny disposition, but you have probably noticed that when you're exhausted, you're more likely to be cranky. And that's not all. Not getting enough sleep affects your emotional regulation. When you're overtired, you're more likely to snap at your boss, burst into tears, or start laughing uncontrollably. So I don't know about those last two, but I guess that can happen to people. But it definitely can happen where you get a little snappy, and I think we've probably experienced that. Number 6, better weight control, which we mentioned earlier. It's pretty interesting. Getting enough sleep could help you maintain your weight. And conversely, sleep loss goes along with the increased risk of weight gain. Why is that? Well, part of the problem is behavioral. If you're overtired, you might be less likely to have the energy to go for that jog or cook a healthy dinner after work. The other part is physiological. The hormone leptin plays a key role in making you feel full. When you don't get enough sleep, leptin levels drop. Result? People who are tired are just plain hungrier, and they seem to crave high fat and high calorie foods specifically. So those are some of the things that can happen if you're not getting enough rest in regard to weight control. Number 7, a couple more here. Clearer thinking. Have you ever woken up after a bad night's sleep feeling fuzzy and easily confused, like your brain can't get out of first gear? Sleep loss affects how you think. According to WebMD, it impairs your attention and your decision-making ability. Studies have found that people who are sleep-deprived are substantially worse at solving logic or math problems than when they're well-rested. They're also more likely to make odd mistakes like leaving their keys in the fridge. Apparently that's happened to somebody, because that's kind of a bizarre example. I don't know that my keys would ever be in the fridge, so I'm not sure why that would happen. But apparently it happened to the author, I guess. So that is interesting, and I think we've all had that too, where you're trying to solve something at work or somewhere else and just not getting anywhere with it, and you do go home and you get a good sleep and you come back the next day and it goes pretty smoothly and you're able to pick right up and get the issue solved. At least I've had that happen. I think probably a lot of us have. Another thing here that's good, that improves with good sleep, 7 to 8 hours of sleep a night, is better memory. They say feeling forgetful, sleep loss could be to blame. Studies have shown that while we sleep, our brains process and consolidate our memories from the day. If you don't get enough sleep, it seems like those memories might not get sorted correctly and can be lost. It's pretty interesting how the brain and the body function there. They say what's more, some research suggests that sleep decreases the chances of developing false memories. In several experiments, people were asked to look over a series of words. Later, they were tested on what they remembered. People who didn't sleep in between were much more likely to remember a word that they hadn't actually seen before. So that's strange. that that would occur. But better memory from sleeping. And the final point they bring out here is stronger immunity. Could getting enough sleep prevent the common cold? One preliminary study put the idea to the test. Researchers tracked over 150 people and monitored their sleep habits for 2 weeks. Then they exposed them to a cold virus. People who got 7 hours of sleep a night or less were almost three times as likely to get sick as the people who got at least 8 hours of sleep a night. More research is needed to establish a real link. This study was small, and other factors may have influenced the results. Still, you can't go wrong getting 8 hours of sleep when possible. So your company probably isn't going to give you $500 if you get those 20 nights in a row of 7 hours or 8 hours of sleep like the one company does. But who knows? There are benefits that go beyond just the little bit of extra cash. Getting enough sleep is important, and being consistent with it, that can be a challenge. But that's one of the most important things is being consistent, trying to get those 7 to 8 hours of sleep a night, and you get some really interesting benefits from that, and that's just a few of them. There's probably quite a bit more, and probably quite a bit more we don't even know about yet that seems to happen where there's you know, things that our bodies do that we don't even know, and then years later come to find out that, oh, that was why we needed 8 hours of sleep a night. So hopefully you can get that and not have to overwork to stories that kind of tie in there. Some people working way too many hours, they think, and the benefits of getting enough sleep. So there's got to be a balance there to be as productive as possible. Thanks for spending some of your Labor Day with us. Hopefully you have a great rest of the day. Of course, those listening outside of the U.S. that don't have Labor Day today, hopefully you're having a great regular Monday. and thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live. Make sure you listen for the Key of David program, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, and also there's a new Just the Best Literature with your host, Dennis Leap, and a Music for Life with your host, Ryan Malone. So we didn't skimp on the holiday programming for you. In fact, plenty of new programs to listen to today here on KPCG. Thanks for joining us online also at kpcg.fm. And, of course, you can use the TuneIn app as well on your smart device. And if you're driving, you can plug us in and take a listen to the programming here on Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG. Have a great rest of your Monday. For myself, Dwight Falk, come again. See us on Tuesday. We'll be back. Myself and Grant Turgeon will be here, and I look forward to talking to you then. You're listening to Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG online. We're at kpcg.fm.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG. You can download Trumpet Radio live segments from kpcg.fm.